Hello and welcome to another podcast in our surrogacy series. This is episode 10 and the final episode in the series. And in this podcast, we're going to be discussing the eventualities and what would happen if the law reform around surrogacy doesn't go through. I'm joined today by Kirsty, Alan, Sarah and Natalie. And as always, I'll just go around the table and give everybody a chance to introduce themselves. Kirsty, would you like to go first for us, please?
Hi, I'm Kirsty Horsey. I lecture in the law school at the University of Kent, and I've been involved with Surrogacy UK's campaign for legal reform for several years now.
Thanks, Kirsty. Alan, would you like to go next, please?
Yeah, I'm Alan White. I'm chair of Surrogacy UK's board. I'm a father through surrogacy, and I'm a bit of a latecomer to the law reform project. So I'm currently helping coordinate a letter writing campaign to make sure that we put as much pressure on lawmakers as possible to pass the reforms.
Natalie, would you like to go next, please?
Hi, yeah, I'm Natalie Smith. I am a member of SUK and I'm a mum to twin girls who are born through surrogacy and who are now nearly 13 years old. So quite a long time ago. And I've been involved in campaigning for changes to surrogacy law on behalf of SUK since way back in 2014. So been on this journey for a very long time and very hopeful to get some change happening.
Thanks, Natalie. And last but by no means least, we have Sarah.
Hello, my name's Sarah Jones. I'm CEO over at Surrogacy UK. I have been a surrogate for the last two decades, and I am here to give the surrogate's point of view to the legal reform.
Thank you all. So would someone just like to weigh in and outline the current legislative process for surrogacy reforms in the UK, please?
You want me to do that as I'm the lawyer in the room?
You can certainly take that as the lawyer in the room, please, Kirsty. Thank you.
So where we are at the moment is the Law Commission of England and Wales and the Scottish Law Commission, which are independent bodies that review usually old and out of date laws, have reviewed the law on surrogacy following much lobbying. And they have come up with proposals and recommendations to change the law in certain places and a draft new surrogacy bill. So there is a surrogacy bill out there on the table. It's publicly available on the Law Commission's website. And that has to happen in order for that to become a new law. And at the moment, we are awaiting a response from government because when the Law Commission does these things, the government is obliged to come up with an interim response within 6 months and a full response within 12 months. And so we are currently awaiting, and we are sort of like within a couple of days of that 6 month period, waiting to see what the government are going to say about this, whether and if they're going to take it forward, and if so, when. And then if they do decide to take it forward, you have the whole sort of legislative process that goes on through Parliament anyway, which is, you know, having to get through the House of Commons, followed by getting through the House of Lords, unless it's introduced the other way around, which previous bills in this area have been introduced to the House of Lords first. So as yet, we don't know what will happen. And then it's got to get through all the readings and committee stages in both houses. And there may be amendments along the way. So the surrogacy bill, as it looks on paper at the moment, might not be the final form if it is taken forward at all. We hope it is, but who knows?
And Alan, you mentioned a campaign that you're currently involved in. How will that affect the process that Kirsty's just outlined?
It possibly won't affect the process. I mean, the process is stamped in statute in terms of how laws are passed in the UK. What we hope it will do is affect whether the starting gun is fired on that process, whether the government of the day is supportive of the law. And basically that's because the MPs in Parliament have an obligation to represent the interests of their constituents. If enough of our constituents are members and the surrogacy community can put pressure on their MP to support the bill, then it has more chance of being passed. It won't affect especially the timescales that it's going to take. I mean, I think that we're looking at potentially it's going to take upwards of 12 months to pass the law from, you know, the time that the government signaled their intention to it. And none of this is by any means certain.
Yeah. And it's probably worth just reflecting for a minute that a lot of this not all of it, but a huge amount of this started with a letter writing campaign as well. So back in 2015, there was quite a big letter writing campaign to kind of convince the government that we needed the law to be looked at and that the current law wasn't working and we needed change. So I don't think we can underestimate the impact that it has to contact MPs and get the real life experiences of people in the surrogacy world heard. So yeah, as Alan said, won't necessarily affect the process, but it might affect some of the appetite and motivation for trying to get these reforms passed and through.
Thanks for weighing in on all of that, guys. So in terms of You've mentioned letter writing campaigns and Alan used the analogy of getting the starting gun to fire. So are there any other external factors such as general elections or anything that can influence this or maybe even change the timeline of kind of 12 months plus?
I think your guess is as good as ours on that as to whether and when there's going to be a general election. I mean, there has to be a general election before the end of 2024, doesn't there? That's the timescale we're working to, I think. But whether it's called sooner than that is a different question. And there's also the question about who wins that election as and when it occurs, because hopefully the letter writing campaign and other things such as, you know, like publications in newspapers and in academic publications and policy publications, hopefully those kind of things will be read by and absorbed by members of all political parties. And so this won't drop off the agenda just because it's been initiated by the current government. Hopefully this is something that they realise is a social issue and it's non-party political, really. So hopefully it won't fall off.
I would totally echo that as well, that Kirsty's just said. I mean, one of the things that we're also involved in is an all-party parliamentary group, which is an interest group, really. In Parliament on different topics. So there's one on surrogacy. And what's great is that we do have members from across all of the different parties on that. So, you know, this isn't a particular party issue. This is something that all MPs can get involved with. So hopefully we'll have appetite no matter who wins that general election. But obviously it may have quite a significant impact on how much time it's going to take, I think, is the key thing, really.
As a bit of a politics geek, the current kind of best gossip about when there might be a general election is kind of following the party conferences next year. So in about a year's time. Now, the maths probably doesn't allow any legislation that's announced or that's not yet been announced to pass within that time. I think that if the government does, and we should say that, you know, all of the support for the Law Commission's work and things has all come from the current government. So the current government have been pretty supportive of this legislation. And there's lots of reasons why they wouldn't want to waste that support by making sure that, you know, that starting gun is fired. If the starting gun is fired, there's very likely to be a general election before the legislation is passed. And in that case, there is, I understand, a vehicle or like a mechanism through which the current government can kind of pass on that legislation and ask the next government to kind of take it forward without like there being a break in it having to start again. So that's something that the government could choose to employ. But I think that the big focus for us, which we'll discuss here and in the letter writing campaign, is trying to get support for this legislation into party manifestos so that regardless of who wins or what kind of combination of coalition government there might be in after the general election, that they are committed to taking the surrogacy reform forward.
So that's quite a positive step then, Alan, what you've just described. So there's not really any likelihood that we'll be backpedaling at all, as you say, in the event of a new government being elected in place.
Well, we don't know. That's only if they were to press the starting gun before the general election, which they haven't yet. So it might, it would be brilliant if we were in that situation, the process had started as soon as possible, but it's also an option that they won't start this process until they've got through a general election and come out the other side, in which case that's going to be a significant time, amount of time before we press that starting gun. So yeah, it's unknown at the moment.
One of the key things is that surrogacy is a bit of a niche issue, right? So in terms of governments and parties supporting things, it's an issue that doesn't affect many people, but those people it does affect, it matters to an enormous amount. Okay, so the purpose of us trying to write letters and speak to our MPs and things is to make the voice of those relatively few people very loud. Okay, so that's why we're trying to get people's stories, people's narrative, people's personal experience of surrogacy. Because when you compare it to, you know, the other issues on the government agenda, like the economy or HS2, it's a relatively small issue for people, but we know it matters a lot to us, and we know it matters a lot to everyone listening to this podcast. But that's why we need people's support to make the voice very loud.
Yeah. And I would add to that and say that surrogacy is very niche, but it also has a relation to some bigger issues like LGBT issues, you know, families and family creation, IVF, assisted conception. So, you know, I think there might be MPs who have a broader interest, which surrogacy might overlay a little bit. So it's about really getting to speak to those kind of people and piquing their interest in it.
Of course, the other thing that we have to do in that regard is to make sure that the accurate information is getting to those people and not the sort of misinformation or worse that's out there sometimes. And so, you know, people explaining their own stories and their own pathways through surrogacy and how their own families were created and why helps to get that point across. So when they are, if and when they are debating surrogacy in Parliament, then they are debating from a foundation of actual knowledge rather than assumptions and myths and suppositions, which are unfortunately very
rife,
very often seen in discussions on surrogacy.
And this is something that this podcast series has actively tried to be instrumental in as well, isn't it, Kirsty? That we've quashed a lot of myths, as you called them, certainly around social media misconceptions that have been out there. And we know that, unfortunately, these days, the voices on social media are getting louder. And so I guess, as you rightly said, what we're hoping is that these opinions will be formed off of a foundation of fact rather than opinions found on social media around the various topics that Natalie's just intimated in, you know, how Alan's kind of said how this topic would necessarily be considered by some as a niche, like almost a small seed, but the roots that come out of that seed do touch on a lot of topics, as Natalie has alluded to. I mean, we all remain hopeful, but how likely is it that all proposed reforms will be enacted? Is that something we can put sort of a figure to or a likelihood to?
I think it's very hard to do that. We don't really know, I think is the honest answer. I'd be interested what Kirsty and Alan think as well. But we don't really know until it hits that debate through the process, through going through the House of Lords and the House of Commons, when the debates will start and people may propose amendments. I guess what we do know, though, is that actually creating a law for surrogacy is incredibly complicated, and it is balancing a lot of different issues, a lot of different views, and it's balancing, you know, the rights of different groups, the surrogate, the surrogate's family, intended parents, children born through surrogacy. And the Law Commission has had a huge task in trying to get a bill that gets that balance right, and they've taken a long time, quite rightly actually, I would say now in hindsight, even though I was very keen for it to be quicker. But you know, it is really complex to try and get a law that works. So I think what they've put forward is a very good response to balancing all of those issues and all of the complexity that starts to unravel once you really start to try and create a law around this. So hopefully it will be taken as a holistic law. The parts of it work well together. And if you start to try and unpick those and change bits, I think perhaps you maybe lose something. Now, that will happen. But I think you have to kind of, I would hope that there's some common sense in the holistic approach that's been taken to the Law Commission, how the different elements of the proposals balance each other and support each other. So I think if you pick too much at it, you might end up with something that doesn't work as well as the whole that's already been proposed, in my view.
The comments that I've had and the comments that I've seen online in opposition to the legal reform going through have only presented another option, which is to ban surrogacy. There hasn't been any sort of comments of, well, maybe if we tweak this bit or if we tweak that bit, it might work. So for me, it's hard to try and see what things might be compromised on, because the only alternatives that have been put forward is a total ban on surrogacy, which I don't think will happen. So, I mean, I would be really interested to get that opinion from those that oppose surrogacy. Okay, which bits are palatable to you? You know, which bits could you live with? Which bits can you see making it much safer for those people going through surrogacy? But I haven't heard anything yet about any sort of compromise on them.
Yeah, so what you said there, Sarah, it makes it sound like it could boil down to a very, almost like a yes or no answer on the draft bill. And my next question was going to be around whether there were any contentious points that are more likely to be contested or rejected. But by the sounds of it, it doesn't sound like there are. Like you say, the only alternative would be to ban surrogacy altogether. It doesn't sound like the bill contains anything that is kind of considered to be a nice to have versus an absolutely necessary. I mean, is that a fair assumption to make?
For me, I think it depends who you talk to. I agree there is that polarization. I think there will be some really detailed debate around the parts of the law, and I think that's right. I don't think it will be as simple as a are you against it or are you for it? I think MPs will be more nuanced and more kind of mature in how they look at the law than that. But on one hand, it is a bit more black and white. So, you know, surrogacy is already supported by the government. The government have said from the start that they support surrogacy as a legitimate way to build families in the modern world. So it's never been on the table for them about whether this is about a ban for surrogacy. It's about how to improve surrogacy in the UK. So that's the question that's on the table from their perspective. The question is not, should surrogacy be allowed? That's not the question that's being debated. So, you know, hopefully that deals a little bit with the anti-surrogacy point that Sarah made really well. So, yeah, I think that hopefully the debate will be more mature than a simple yes or no. That shouldn't be the question that's on the table for Parliament.
I don't think it is. I don't think it will be. I mean, it's for, like we said at the outset of this, it's for the government to decide whether they're going to take this forward or not. So there is the sort of yes or no in that kind of situation. But the bill is always there, so we can continue lobbying for it, whoever's in government, and someone might take it forward one day. I think the Law Commission's recommendations, as far as I've seen it in sort of both, you know, in the world of academics and practitioners and surrogacy support organisations and all kinds of things, I think it's all been pretty positively received, which is great. And that goes to what Natalie said about them taking so much care and so much time to get this, you know, as right as they possibly could. The only thing I think I've seen any kind of, not even pushback, but, you know, kind of, you know, sort of not quite satisfied on is the section of the reforms which relates to how expenses are going to be handled under the new legislation. And I think the general thinking among some groups is that they've just been a bit too restrictive on that, and there's actually some really good practice out there as it is at the moment. So it's to be hoped that if there are some amendments, they are sort of positive, you know, kind of add-ons that we've already got good practice in this area. So, you know, why don't we look at that instead of having this sort of, there is a kind of black and white thing that the Law Commissions have proposed there about permitted and unpermitted things that can be compensated for in terms of expenses. And so, like, but being so black and white is pretty restrictive. And in the way they've suggested that happens, it's a bit more restrictive than kind of happens now in forms of good practice that all the sort of main surrogacy organisations adhere to already. And so hopefully their voices will be able to be heard, and, you know, maybe there's an amendment to be made in there somewhere, or at least something that just says that this is, you know, this is the rules, the absolute rules, but work with them as you see fit, you know, something like that. But that's the only bit where I've seen any kind of criticism. Is like, it's a strong word, but I don't know if it's actual criticism, but bits where it's not quite been deemed to be perfect.
When you look at the draft bill, there are some bits which seem really uncontentious. I mean, I find it difficult to imagine anyone objecting to there being a register for surrogacy in the way that there's a register for adoption. when you look at the more delicate parts of the bill, Kirsty's just talked about one of them, but also potentially the length of time that surrogates have to object to parental responsibility passing to being with the intended parents. I think there's a 6-week period. You know, you can see parts of the bill maybe being amended or objected to. And some of our partner organisations in the surrogacy community would very much like the new pathway to be accessible to people pursuing international surrogacy. So there's maybe, it's not in the bill, but maybe there's room for debate and amendment there, and subject to the pressure that people put on. But I mean, from our perspective, we I think it's fair to say we're pretty pleased with the bill. So it's maybe difficult for us to imagine where people might object. I don't mind as well, Alex, doing some ridiculous speculation about the chances of the bill passing in very broad brush strokes. A lot depends on what we hear from the minister in the next few days or weeks. I think one thing is pretty sure: if this government doesn't make positive statements and movements about it, then that reduces the chances of it passing considerably, and we'll kind of be back to lobbying for, as Kirsty says, people to take an interest in the bill in the future. I think if we can get it into all party manifestos, then the chances of it passing at some point in the next few years, you know, rises above 50%. I don't know whether it's much more than that, but that's the kind of importance of the pressure that we can put on now, because there is a chance, and it's a chance that's more than 0%, that this bill will just kind of get lost on a shelf somewhere. And that's the thing that we really want to avoid happening, by showing Parliament how interested people in surrogacy are in having this bill passed. So we really don't want it to go onto a shelf, as some Law Commission reports and bills have done in the past. So it's really important, the pressure that we can put on right now.
And a disclaimer there that was just Alan's forecast. It wasn't wasn't anything that was that is guaranteed to happen or not happen. So we've got everything crossed that is a positive outcome for all of this.
Was Kirsty going to come back in with some?
I was just going to say, just to put another spanner in the works, there's other external factors over and above general elections and all that kind of thing, is that the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Authority has been asked to review the entirety of the legislation, and has recently consulted on sort of other issues, wider issues in the legislation that governs all assisted conception, of which parts of the law on surrogacy are within that legislation as well currently. And so the HFEA is currently formulating recommendations to the Department of Health what to do with the whole legislation, or changes that need to be made to bring that into the 21st century properly. I mean, it's a 21st century statute, but with the hangover into the 20th century. So there is quite a lot that needs to be done in that respect. And so there is a question of whether they sort of, technical term, smush that all together and try and do everything at once, rather than sort of just getting on with this where they already have an answer put in front of them. So again, choices to be made somewhere along the line.
So we've covered, I mean, obviously Alan's kindly forecast what he thinks about what could be passed. What are the immediate and possibly even the long-term consequences if this legal reform doesn't go through? I mean, is it just likely that everything will stay the same as it currently is? I mean, what kind of backlash can we expect if that's the case?
Well, I guess the easy answer to that question is that there will be no change. Things will carry on as they are at the moment, and we'll just stay with the current situation. That won't be great, because we know the whole premise of the law reform campaign is that the current law is not fit for purpose. It's totally out of date with the way that surrogacy works in reality. It's totally out of date with the way people who are going through surrogacy, either surrogates, intended parents, children through surrogacy, feel about surrogacy. Lawyers, practitioners, people working in the field also don't feel that the law is set up to enable them to give the right advice, guidance and support to people going through surrogacy either. So from all sides of those who are involved in surrogacy, that the law is not fit for purpose. So it means that the community has to go on making do despite the current law, which is not great. I think there are some quite concrete consequences of the current law, which really hit surrogates and intended parents and children the hardest. I think that it reinforces, we've been talking about myths and false assumptions, the current law reinforces a lot of myths about surrogacy, about how surrogates feel, about what's best for children. And, you know, it's those on the ground who are creating families in this way that just have to come up against and fight those misconceptions and prejudices every day as they're going through their journey. And we know that, for example, in hospitals, the current law creates some bad practice towards surrogates and intended parents. And unfortunately, those things will carry on happening. I think for me as well, in the long term, when we started campaigning for changes to the law nearly 10 years ago now, I naively thought that it would be something that could be achieved in a couple of years. What's become very apparent is that changing the law is not quick. So if we miss this opportunity, I mean, we're already nearly 10 years away from when we started campaigning for it. And, you know, we're at least a few years away from any of this going through if we stay on the happy path. If the law, if they don't, and we've had such an investment of time and energy and thought from the Law Commission. They have spoken to everybody. They've really done a very thorough, very inclusive research. Kirsty, our APPG, we've gathered so much evidence and research. What more was going to be needed to push this through? And if it doesn't go through now, it's going to be another 20 years or something before this happens. It really is a kind of once in a generation life. Once in a generation opportunity for it to go through at the moment. So I think as well as there being quite concrete, everyday, immediate consequences of the law not passing now, we also means we're looking at a very long haul until this potentially could change in the future again.
Yeah. So what happens immediately is that things don't get better. The current inadequate laws that we have governing surrogacy, which aren't great for people involved and they're not great for children of surrogacy, kind of carry on. I think one of the aims that Surrogacy UK has is to make surrogacy as inclusive and accessible as possible. Now the proposed law removes or makes easier some of the barriers to entry and access to surrogacy, because it improves the conditions for all people involved. So I think in the medium long term, we hope that the new law will mean that the incidence of surrogacy, the practice of surrogacy kind of grows. It's not going to get, you know, massive straight away, but it will become more accessible to people. And that's really good. That's something that we think is a real positive for society. So if this law isn't passed, then that growth and that removal of barriers to access to surrogacy, won't happen. So that's a big deal. We'll continue to campaign and put pressure on, of course, but now really is a once in a generation chance for us to change this law.
From a surrogate's point of view, I don't think people realise that the current situation as it stands now presents such a risk to surrogates. And I think the people that are proposing that nothing changes don't really understand the current risks there are for surrogates going through this process. You know, no regulation, no need for checks and making sure that people are informed and are making informed choices, things like that. And actually, for the last 20 years that I've been involved, we've been very lucky that more things haven't gone wrong. But I think the real risk is that surrogacy isn't going away. We've seen year on year the increase in the amount of people undertaking surrogacy, the amount of surrogates that we've got coming through Surrogacy UK at the moment, and the amount of parental orders being granted, is that surrogacy is on the increase. So if those protections aren't put in place, then there's more chance of something going wrong just because of the sheer numbers of people that are undertaking surrogacy. And I think the people that don't want this legal reform to go through are really not seeing the bigger picture of how those reforms could actually really protect surrogates.
And as Natalie and Alan has said as well, you know, if we think, or the people involved in the world of surrogacy think, that the laws are outdated and behind the times already, you add another 20 years onto that and how the world of surrogacy is going to evolve and grow, as Sarah's alluded to there. It's only logical that the laws and the support, the legal support around the world of surrogacy, needs to grow and evolve at the same rate. So I'm going to bring this podcast to kind of a massive call to action conclusion, and I'd like you all to weigh in on this with whatever steps you think. What can members of the general public do to engage their MPs in supporting these surrogacy legal reforms? And why is it, I mean, we've already kind of covered it, but can we summarise why it is important to do so right away, or as quickly as they possibly can?
Wherever you are listening to this podcast from, there should be a link to part of Surrogacy UK's website, which contains a few things. So the first are two template letters to send to your MP, to personalise and then to send to your MP. So one of those is if you've not written before. One of those is if you have already written about surrogacy to your MP. And it's kind of a follow-up letter. And basically, in those letters, what we want you to do is share your personal experience of surrogacy. So MPs, we know, respond better to things from their constituents, and you can only write to your own MP. That's really important. But they respond better where they understand what the personal impact and the personal story. So when I say template, it's a very small template that you are will ask you to put lots of personal detail into. And basically that the letter will invite the MP to do a few things. The main things that they can do are to write to the minister to put pressure on them to say that, you know, they've heard from their constituents, this bill is really important, so can the government give it some priority in Parliament? And also to come along to the all-party parliamentary group for surrogacy, which, if it's not already passed, is on the 8th of November 2023. So to join that meeting, to come and hear about surrogacy from us, and again, to help put pressure and raise the profile of this bill in Parliament. And the other thing to do is to write to your party leader or their party leader to ask for the surrogacy support for the surrogacy bill to go into the party manifestos. They're three really key things. And we need that to happen as soon as possible, really. So kind of if you're listening to this, then go home tonight and do it. The more pressure that we can get, the more letters we can get written before Christmas, the more chance that there is of that starting gun that I mentioned being fired in this session of Parliament or with it before the next general election.
I was going to add to that. I felt very enthused just listening to Alan talk about those actions. They are really easy to do, but, and also it doesn't have to be a letter, or it can be a letter and try and ask if you could have a 5-minute phone call with your MP to talk to them about it. Go and visit them at a surgery to see them face to face. It's just about kind of having a human to human conversation about surrogacy and what it means for you, what it means to you, what it means to your family, and kind of why you want these reforms and what you want them to do to help. So, you know, I would kind of go for a letter and trying to get on the phone or a face-to-face meeting as well.
And MPs really like to have this engagement from constituents, and they really like to hear about personal stories. And you know, bear in mind, they might not have had any personal relationship with surrogacy. So you might be the first person that they've spoken to who's been influenced or impacted by surrogacy. So you'll probably have a really positive reception. Lots of people who've written letters or made visits to their MPs in the first round of the letter writing campaign actually found it a really positive experience and had a good chat. And lots of MPs invited them down to their constituency surgery and were really receptive. And we had questions raised in Parliament and we had letters written to ministers. We kind of need to do that, but times 100. In the next couple of months.
It's also important to know that you don't have to be an intended parent or a surrogate to write those letters or to have that contact with your MP. You can be an auntie, an uncle, a grandparent, a friend. You know, it's not just restricted to those people who have gone through surrogacy themselves, because we know how, you know, far reaching surrogacy can impact people. So, you know, not only you, but get your family involved as well. There's sort of no restrictions on who can sort of put their letter into their MP.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would also kind of, one final tip, I guess, from me would be maybe do it if you do a little bit of quick research on your MP. Is there an adjacent issue that they're interested in? Have they been vocal on LGBT rights? Are they interested in, you know, have they got an experience of helping people who have been through cancer diagnosis, cancer treatment? You know, all those kind of, you know, are they interested in infertility, assisted conception? Are there some of these wider issues that surrogacy is really important to that they're interested in? And that might be a way to get them interested as well.
And if their voting record doesn't look particularly promising, write to them anyway, because you might be the person that can help change their mind.
Absolutely. I was just going to add as well, having done research with children born through surrogacy over the last sort of year or so, that those children's voices are really powerful, because that, you know, going back to the sort of assumptions and myths idea, everybody's all like, well, you know, all you adults saying all these things, you've got your perspective, but, you know, what about the children? And it was actually really great to hear from the children that they thought the law was weird and out of date as well. And so actually, if you've got kids who are of an age to go and talk to an MP, take them with you, because their voices are really important in this, because you know, there's a lot of assumptions that children are damaged and they don't know what's going on, and they, you know, and none of the kids we worked with were anything like that. They were all amazing and really erudite and positive about surrogacy and their experiences, and had ongoing contact with surrogates and called them all kinds of different names, and had, you know, relationships with surrogates' own children and all the things that people don't necessarily think about. And that's another thing as well, just, and Sarah might want to come in on this, but surrogates speaking as well, but also surrogates' own children, as to, you know, we heard from a lot of kids about just how proud they were of what their mums had done to help somebody else, and a sort of long-term, you know, impact that had on them as, you know, as growing up and developing and seeing, you know, what that kind of empathetic help means to people. You know, so, you know, those voices, children of both surrogates and who were born by surrogacy, I think it's really valuable.
Yeah, you've actually just reminded me, and I feel really bad that I haven't done this already, but my eldest daughter's obviously nearly 30, and she lives in a different constituency to me, so she can definitely start writing some letters for me, for definite.
There we are. So definitely get people involved, you know, from every and all corners of this world of surrogacy to share their stories, and it can only make this voice louder and give more of a chance, as Alan said at the beginning of this podcast, to have that starting gun fired. As we've said, everything you need in terms of letter templates and more information around all of this can be found on our website, surrogacyuk.org. And from wherever you're listening to this podcast, please go back to the beginning of this series and feel free to give all the episodes a listen, because they will just help to quash the mystery, the myths and the rumors on social media, and you know, even share them you think it'll help, even share them with your MPs. As Kirsty rightly said, just give them a more solid factual foundation to build all of this off of. We hope you found this episode, and indeed the series, helpful, if you've listened to all the episodes thus far. I'd like to thank my guests, Kirsty Horsey, Alan White, Natalie Smith and Sarah Jones. And again, just thank you to all of our listeners for giving this podcast your attention. We hope you've found them valuable. Thank you.